successful individuals with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsewheels.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through horsewheels.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only a low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsewheels.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsewheels.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three. At the races. And at the stadium. At the Coliseum. Because Dave Hill is standing by for his Thursday opportunity to lure us into the world of betting on professional sports. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
We were pre-radio. We were appreciating what has transpired. It was Dave, of course, who got us to take an interest in Dan Delgado and this project where he is doing a episodic dissection, the Jockey Club, a Let It Ride podcast, and I would not have found this if not for you and your participation, and he found you inadvertently. I was going to ask him how he had found you originally, but it was that piece you wrote at the beginning of the year about Let It Ride.
Yeah, when Jay Conley passed away, and he maybe was trying to do some research for a show, and he found it, so he reached out to me.
Amazing, and I didn't realize that your piece coordinated with Jay's passing. Now that you say that, I think at the beginning you cite it. I'll put up the link to that. It was at America's Best Racing, and I mean then the incredible happenstance of you recording your visit in April and you basically dictating to Dan that you were only going to talk about the Robbie Coltrane mutual clerk scene.
Right. Right.
And then the way in which he distributes the Wednesdays, it ends up being the Wednesday after Coltrane passes. I mean, you couldn't make it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I was surprised at first. I thought I went and double checked. I thought maybe he moved the episode up or something because of the,
no,
you know, because he, no, it just sort of happened that way by chance, which, you know, made it that much more bittersweet, I think, to be able to talk about that scene and talk about Robbie. We talk about Robbie Coltrane in the episode a bit too, and his career. So yeah, that was nice to have that go up that week.
Considering that you're somebody who has got certain interests that motivate you and drive you, and for those that have started listening to the Let It Ride scene by scene episodes that Dan has crafted quite often with his brother, you've got to have, you know, a unique appreciation of what is discussed in that opening sort of introductory pod, which is being obsessive and you know, being so you know, in love with a topic or a field of study, or, you know, basically being somebody that is driven by, you know, certain motivations. And I'm going to make the point that permeates gamblers and sports fans, and particularly horse players.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that the way I think about myself is that I have a lot of interests. So my knowledge of the world is a mile wide and an inch deep. You know, you know, I have jack of all trades and a master of none. You know, I feel like that's, you know, I don't know that I could do a podcast like the one Dan's doing, where, you know, I spend years just talking about the same movie and just becoming an expert in this one film. But I so appreciate the people that do that, because, you know, listening to his podcast gives me that inch deep worth of knowledge that I want to have on that topic that is interesting to me, I suppose.
I was stunned by the whole, you know, the epiphany that this exists. And in that first, that Australian guest of his, Blake Holden, that he's doing minute by minute breakdowns of film. I mean, and yeah. that's, I mean, these are people that, you know, that go to school for cinematography,
right,
and that ilk, that are,
right,
that driven.
Yeah, I think the first one they did was for the movie Heat, and
yeah,
I started listening to it because I love that movie as well, but I honestly couldn't hang in there. Just, you know, it was like so much inside baseball on, like, you know, the technical craft of movie making that I kind of fell out of it, out of that one after a while. But I think Dan's podcast is a little different, you know, because he's able to get into quite a bit more than just filmmaking, but the whole culture of the racetrack, which I think is, you know, great about his project.
Wow. And that's what, yeah, that's what made it such a compelling conversation. And, you know, I'm a big film buff and, you know just enough to, you know, ask questions or, you know, bring up topics and, you know, free associate essentially with, you know, with the makeup of Let It Ride. But I was just tickled by the whole concept. So I thank you for bringing it to our attention. And I hope that Dan continues, you know, to go on essentially a publicity tour. I was quite amused yesterday when Dan put up a tweet that his show, that the Jockey Club, had raced up the rankings in film history category in podcast on Apple, I guess. So he was pleased with the reception he got with our audience.
Yeah, we in the business we call that the Steve Bick bump.
Usually reserved for booksellers. typically it's those of you that have written and Glennie Kane Oakford for years. I used to get the biggest kick out of it. Glennie, you know, 4 months after an appearance would either send me a picture or send me a text and say, residuals, got a check for $19 for a book, you know, for her book that had been out of print for, you know, for a number of years, and the home run horse that would suddenly sell, you know, 17 copies after she appeared on the show and they mentioned it. It's pretty funny. Time to turn our attention to, so thank you for letting everybody know about this. It was wonderful. The week passed and you were in trouble. You were, it was not looking good, and you rallied late.
Yeah. I was 6-6 going into Sunday night, and then I lost that game. So I was 6-7, but Monday night, you know, last week I was apologizing to your listeners for having picked the Chicago Bears, and not only picked them, but I admitted on the air that I bet my actual dollars. It was one of the few games I actually bet money on, and I was admitting that on air as if it was like confession. But they did it. They made me look like a genius. They won the game outright, which I was not expecting, and I was very happy to see. So finished 7-7, and we are just barely clinging to a positive record right now. So I need a big week to kind of create some distance here.
Before we talk about this week, and let me go back and pull up this week's column, some trends or some results from last week, any anomalies, or are we basically, you know, into a pretty much a steady beat of the same themes week to week?
Well, I mean, there were some massive upsets last week, you know, and I think the thing that was kind of the talk of the NFL this week is that the two quarterbacks who were battling out for MVP last season, you know, both lost last week in kind of embarrassing showings, and that's Brady and Rodgers. But even Matt Ryan, who's he's the third oldest quarterback in the NFL, he also had a bad game and got benched for the rest of the season. Yep. So, you know, these older quarterbacks, the sort of, you know, the last remaining of that generation that, you know, and some real titans, you know, some guys who've been to the Super Bowl who are just having a tough season right now. And so there's been a lot of talk about that. I'm not sure that these are trends. In fact, we can talk about it a little bit, but, you know, I picked the Bucks tonight, and I'm high on the Bucks still, despite them losing to the Carolina Panthers straight up. Maybe the biggest upset in NFL history. I mean, that was a huge shock that game. I mean, it was a massive spread, and they won it outright. I think that was that surprised a lot of people with Tucker as quarterback. But they looked good. They looked like they were playing some spirited football, and the Buccaneers they really looked bad. They had a bad game. But what I wrote about this week in the column is that, you know, there's a real tendency to overreact in the NFL and to take a bad game and adjust your numbers and adjust your expectations going into the next week and put too much stock into the previous week's results rather than kind of looking at things at a more granular level. And, you know, I mentioned in the column that a lot of kind of quantitative, you know, analytically based power ranking models around the league still have the Bucks pretty high. They have, you know, they're dropping for sure. They're not looking as good as the people had hoped they would, but they're still pretty high. They still have a strong defense, and they have a very, you know, they're not doing well on the ground. They're running the ball really poorly, but that's never been, you know, they have a great quarterback and they have some good receivers. And if they can watch some tape and figure out how to get out of this dink and dunk offense and get back to what Brady does, it's possible they can return to some old form, at least, you know, a little bit. So they're in a division where a little bit can go a long way. You know, nobody in their division has a winning record right now in the AFC South. So I'm still optimistic about the Bucks.
You know, it's interesting too that after a couple of seasons where the NFC East was being maligned as you know, the weakest in, well, certainly in memory in an extended period, and how quickly that kind of a thing can change and morph. It doesn't take much in this league, and I guess that gets back to the, you know, the original theme that we touched on quite a bit in the early weeks, which was, you know, the parity scenario about how close these teams are. It's almost like the original NASCAR concept. Everybody starts out with the same, or the IROC concept. Everybody starts out with the exact same car, and then there's nuanced improvements to make, or in some cases, mistakes that slow the car down. The opposite side of the equation.
Yeah, but it's also interesting to think about, like, how in college football, for example, when the AP does their rankings every week, you know, they take win-loss record into account, probably more so than any other, you know, that's the primary stat. Is win loss record first, and then they try to differentiate between teams with the same win loss record. From there, in the NFL, it's really, and especially in the NFL betting markets, it doesn't work that way at all. I mean, we see this week that, you know, the Jets and the Giants, despite these great records, are both underdogs this week against teams that are, you know, that have worse records than them. I mean, you can see across the markets, you can see it in people's power rankings that. That in the NFL, wins and losses are not treated as being the sort of the defining factor of your football team, because there's so many, you know, there's so many things that can happen. I think what I say in the column is that, you know, you can play poorly and win in the NFL. You can play well and lose. You know, it's all about what the matchup was that week and what your matchup is the following week. And so it's confusing, I think, to some bettors to look at the board this week and say, why? You know, you're giving me points with the Giants. I'm taking them. You know, they're on a roll. You know, it's tempting to want to look at the board and think about it that way. But really, I think when you see something that looks like an anomaly, you should ask some questions and dig a little deeper, because these bookmakers don't pull these numbers out of their rears.
No, exactly. They're a savvy lot, and that, you know, boils down to game after game, week after week, that you can tell games are arcing to a finish, that the line comes into question. That's an interesting point. Is there an elasticity stat about whatever last 2 minutes of a game and point spread coming into play? Being yet to be decided.
What do you mean? Do you mean, is there a do we think
games out of reach? Essentially, that how many, you know, what percentage of games week to week are decided in the last 2 minutes? I mean, obviously, there's going to be circumstances where. You know, two scores in the last 2 minutes could get somebody to cover. But, games that are boiling down, I guess the term is really one score game, right?
Generally. Yeah, and I think that, you know, obviously looking for games where backdoor cover is possible is a sort of a betting angle that I tend to use a lot. I'm not sure that I have a ton of success with it, but I think one way to handicap against the spread is to look for when you see a big spread, a big point spread, right? Like who's the big one on the board this week is the Bills and the Packers. You know, the Bills are laying 11 points, you know, like whether or not teams tend to in garbage time, slow the game down, you know, try to chew up the clock. In those types of situations, teams can, you know, you can find backdoor covers where the losing team who's down by two or three scores will score a quick touchdown because the other team doesn't really care. In fact, sometimes they prefer to get the ball back so that they can continue to control the clock, right? So that's always a good play when you see a game with a real big spread, is to look into some of those numbers and look about what those teams' tendencies are, whether or not that's a potential place where you can get a backdoor cover.
Interesting. Well, then let's dive in. Let's start with tonight. And, here's one of those prime Thursday games. You continue to search for a successful formula on Thursday.
I've not picked a Thursday night game yet this season. So I'm not sure yet if it's a good play to fade me. But it might be. So I'll give you my pick, and your listeners can just decide for themselves whether they want to try the fade Dave formula here this week. But I'm picking Tampa Bay, and this is one of the three games that I feel the best about this week is tonight. I think that Tampa Bay's getting points. Well, now look at this, they're laying a point. So they were, when I picked it, they were getting 2 points. So obviously a lot of other people liked this play too, and they started and they took them. I think that I'd still take them laying a point. I think they win this game by a field goal. And But I really loved it when I was getting points with Tampa Bay. I already kind of explained before what I thought about them. You know, I think that they're at home and they're well matched to play against the Ravens. Their defense is tough to run against. And I'm expecting that the Buccaneers are going to have looked at that tape of that Carolina game, and this will be a, you know, a get right game for them. So I like this spot here on Thursday night, and I'm hoping this will be the first Thursday night win I can get this season, so I can get this monkey off my back.
Yeah, there it is. And that's amazing, actually, that the line, that's as big a line move. How many of those have there been, Dave, in 7 weeks, a line that crossed the threshold?
We've seen the numbers cross through zero. It's not that uncommon when the number, like if the number starts out within a point and a half, it's really not. To go from plus 1.5 to minus 1.5, they say that's not a major move, right? Because you've got to remember that the half point on either side of zero is almost worthless, right? If you're laying a half or getting a half, it's just basically saying you're going to win or lose the game. It's a pick 'em, right? So that's almost a worthless half point. So then when you're talking about the you know, plus one, minus one, that's not a huge move because there's two half points. So there's a whole point that's kind of whatever, negative space. But there have been big line moves throughout already this season. There's been moves, you know, I think moving through a key number is more important than moving through zero, right? When lines move past a 3 or a 7, that's where I think things are a little more dramatic than this. But taking someone from a 1-point dog to a 1-point favorite is not, I don't think, it's not that major. Now, going from a 3-point, you know, if you go from a 3-point dog to 3-point favorite, that's a lot of action. There was a lot of action to move the line that far through a key number of 3, but we're not there yet with this game.
One thing that I do note, so there's Thursday. Let's dive into Sunday. One thing I do note, we got some home dogs again this week.
Yeah, we do. I'm not sure. I'm not as big on them this week as I had been in the past. I know that that's been a good play this season, but I think that the numbers are getting closer to where they should be. For example, Detroit is a home dog this week, and I think they're a deserved home dog. I think that but I also think that number is pretty much on the money. I think I have Detroit losing by 3, and they are getting 3.5 at most books right now. But I'm still not picking them because when I picked them in the paper, the line was 3. So I went ahead and went with the Dolphins on the road at 3. 3.5 is a little better number, and I would have had to dig in a little deeper at 3.5, but that's an example of one of these home dogs. Now, a home dog that I like are the New Orleans Saints, and they're getting, I had them at 2. Let's see what they're getting right now. You know, it's so tough to have to do all my picks on Tuesdays and file file on Tuesday night and then do edits on Wednesday morning, because that's when most of the movement happens. Okay, so the Saints are getting 1 at a lot of places, 1.5 at Circa, and I was getting 2 when I grabbed them. But I think that they win this game, but I think it's going to be close. You know, I had them winning by about 1.5. So the number's probably closer now to where it needs to be. But I'd still take the Saints here. You know, Andy Dalton threw 3 interceptions last week. 2 of them were returned for touchdowns, which was pretty embarrassing. Another of our older quarterbacks having a bad game. But you know, he and Hill combined for over 400 yards passing. I mean, they had an incredible game, right? If not for these turnovers, and not all of them were his fault either. I mean, you know, they had enough firepower to really win that game. I just think they got to figure out how to stop making mistakes. You know, in the NFL, turnovers are so big, and it's again one of these kind of random events that can really throw games one way or another. So I think if you look at New Orleans' numbers and their performance in that game, minus Andy Dalton's turnovers, and I know that's a big thing to say, like, yeah, just forget about these 3 game-changing turnovers, then you'd see a much stronger team and a much better performance. So I like New Orleans in this spot at home against Vegas, but I do think it's going to be a close game.
So far you've got Tampa tonight and New Orleans as two of your your radio pushes. What else?
I like the Jets.
Hey, finally, Jets. Finally. You're finally on board.
Yeah, and I'm on the wrong side of that number because I picked them at 2. Now they're getting 2.5. So obviously I'm not getting good closing line value there. The market's moving away from me there. But if I was betting it today, I'd still grab them. I think that the Jets win outright against the Patriots at home. That game against the Bears, you know, they just look terrible. I think that even the touchdown that Zappe scored were not impressive. You know, I think that Zappe got a lot of, you know, praise for coming in and getting them on the board and creating some momentum at the end of the first half. But, you know, when I watch that tape, it looks like Jakobi Meyers made great plays on some bad passes. You know, like that was not, you know, I think that the second half there, we saw a little bit of Zappe's shortcomings. And I think that it's going to be, we don't even know who's going to start there. I mean, I think that it looks like Belichick's going to try to do the whole quarterback shuffle here. And I'm not sure this is a team. This team has a lot to figure out, a lot to fix. I'm not sure they're going to fix it by Sunday. And the Jets just, you know, they're a team that they lost their best player for sure. They lost Breece Hall. And I think a lot of the action that's going on in the market right now is probably a reaction to the fact that the player who's responsible for most of the Jets offense is out. But, you know, they picked up James Robinson in a steal.
Yep.
And James Robinson is he's no Breece Hall, but he's no slouch.
No.
And I don't know what was going on with him in Jacksonville and why they had sort of soured on him this season. I guess we'll see. But, you know, he's a good, cheap replacement to get somebody who can run the ball. But I think the Jets, you know, I think that they're going to do well here against this particular New England team. And it's good they drew New England this week if they want to keep their streak alive, because I think New England's really struggling right now. Otherwise, the Jets would be having to figure out a new running back against a tougher opponent. So, yeah, I'm picking the Jets.
Do we want to talk about the New York Football Giants?
Yeah, well, let's see. What's the line right now?
I got 3. Three or 3.5.
3, yeah. So I'm, you know, I'm at 3. I lean Seattle in this game. I think that this is the Geno Smith era. I mean, he just seems like he's just putting up like insane numbers, and he looks like an elite quarterback, which is wild. You know, who would have thought that this is what would have happened, that Russell Wilson leaves Seattle, that Geno Wilson becomes an elite quarterback in the league this season, and Russell Wilson's nowhere to be found, right? So it goes to show you the big, you know, I was saying to a friend of mine last night that I think the difference between the Seahawks and the Broncos is coaching. I still think that Russell Wilson's a good quarterback. I think that, you know, there's coaching issues that are inhibiting him somewhat, but Seattle's playing great, and they've figured out their defense issues that they've been having, and Geno's getting a lot of time in the pocket. He's throwing long bombs, and they're at home, and it's a tough place to play on the road in Seattle. I mean, Seattle's got I give them, you know, I give most teams a 1.65 point home field advantage. Seattle, I give a 1.95. I give them, you know, 0.3 of a point for just having such a tough crowd to play against on the road. So I think that this is a good matchup for both of these teams, and I think it'll be fun to watch this game. I think it's going to be a really entertaining game, and they're well matched. But I think that Seattle gets the edge here, and I think that they cover the spread.
Are we counting that as one of the – sometimes I direct
sure.
you. You want to count
it.
That? As a, okay.
Yeah, count it. Go ahead.
So there's four games so far. Typically,
it's a tough one because I think that it'll be a close game. But, if you know, a game where I think that a team that I think will cover the spread a little more comfortably than that game – is Buffalo. I think Buffalo is laying a huge number against the Pack right now. I think they're laying 11. I got them at 10.5. But I think they win this game by 12. So they're at home against the Packers team that just looks, you know.
Free fall.
a mess. And the fact that they just look like there's just no chemistry, you know, Rodgers is throwing those teammates under the bus, you know, they're arguing on the sideline, they're playing dink and dunk, and I just don't know. You know, I know I'm higher on the Bucks than I am on the Packers here, but the thing is, the Bucks are playing the Ravens and the Packers are playing the Bills, right? So if the Bucks were playing the Bills this week, I might have a different, you know, I might not be sitting here on the radio talking about how the Bucks are going to right the ship, because you just don't want to come off of a big loss and then have to face Buffalo the next week, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So this is the biggest number we've got to overcome is 11, I think. Let's see what the Steelers number is now. Yeah, it's 10 and a half. It's 11 some shots. It's 10 and a half. So that's another big one is the Eagles, and Steelers have a big number. And I actually think that Buffalo will do better covering that big number than Philadelphia will against Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh is a good candidate for one of those backdoor cover games, because I think Philadelphia wins this game. You know, they could win by two scores, but I think it'll be, if they do, it'll be like 10 points, because sure. I think if they're up, you know, if they're up by 17, Philly is one of these teams that we've talked about on your show before. They're yes. In the second half, they don't score a lot of points. Well, part of why they don't score a lot of points in the second half is because they build big leads in the first half. So we've seen that happen time and time again, and we've seen Pittsburgh backdoor cover in this season before too. So I think that I would pick Pittsburgh for your listeners too, just because I think they're a great candidate. I think this is a game where Philly could easily be up 17, up 20, something like that, and Pittsburgh comes back and grinds out some touchdowns while Philly's trying to chew the clock. This is a team when you've got a big lead. We've seen the Eagles, they want the ball back. Go ahead, kick the field goal. Go ahead and score, because when we have the ball, we can control the clock. And I think we may see something like that, and we can see the Eagles win this game by 10 points and cover by half. So if your listeners like a good sweat and they like sitting in front of the television on their knees in the last seconds of the game, this might be a fun one to bet on. If you bet the Steelers.
Well, there's six pushes right there. And again, Tampa getting the two, New Orleans getting two and a half with the Jets, Steelers getting 11, Seattle giving 3, Buffalo giving 10.5. You got to pick the battle of the Buckeye State. Bengals go into Cleveland. This is always, not always, but frequently entertaining. And the Bengals seem to have fixed whatever was ailing them.
Yes, they have. I think they're one of the big, they've got the biggest bump this week of any team after that last game. And I know I cautioned listeners before about overreacting, but I'm not just reacting to their last game. The last two games that the Bengals played, one of the big differences we've seen with this team is that they've moved to almost entirely a shotgun. And in the early part of the season, they were really experimenting with, you know, Burrow under center, trying to get their running game going, trying to mix up some different, you know, different types of play calls. And now they're going back to what they did late last season that worked for them, which is Burrow in the shotgun and playing deep. Part of what forced them into this weird thing early in the season was that teams were playing a lot of cover two against Cincinnati, because they realized that Cincinnati was fairly one-dimensional and this was a good way to play against them. But I think that Cincinnati, now that they're going back to what they're good at, going back to that one dimension, they're going to see more success, even though teams are going to play them better. You know, it's better for them to lean into what Joe Burrow does best. And so we've seen that. I mean, we're talking like, I think that two games ago, they played almost entirely shotgun the whole game. So I like that. I like seeing Cincinnati making those kinds of adjustments. This is what I was talking about before, about teams watching the tape, scheming out a new plan, and, you know, changing it all up to right the ship. And what better team to do it against than Cleveland, right? So this will be a fun game to watch. It's going to be the immovable force versus the unstoppable object. Or the unstoppable, you know, unmovable object against the force. So this will be an interesting one, but I think that the number right now is at 3, 3.5, might move to 4. So I would, it looks like it's moving towards 4. I would try to get it before it gets to 4. I got it at 3, but you can get it 3.5 in a lot of places right now. I think they can cover that. I think that Cincinnati wins this game by 4, 4.5 points.
There it is. All right. So we will have a decisive. It's seven games of the schedule. Only two teams are off this week, the Chargers and the Chiefs. There's Dave Hill's action. And, of course, the New York Times will send the link so you can read all of Dave's thoughts. And we also, each visit, talk about, and this is the last episode of the Gamblers season, and you touch on a arena, Dave, that a lot of people probably don't know exists, and that is high-stakes backgammon. And there's actually a lot of crossover in racing. There's any number of racing personalities and gamblers that have been involved, you know, in the, I remember in what, in the 70s, the backgammon craze. But that underworld and that environment of high-level gambling on backgammon existed, you know, before the general public discovered the game.
Yeah, you know, backgammon had its moment in the 70s where it really became popular and a little bit chic, and it was played at the Playboy Mansion a lot, and it was played in by movie stars, and James Bond played in the movies, and it had a bit of a sexy kind of aura around it in the 70s and into the early 80s. But, you know, but these days, backgammon is mostly thought of as the game that's on the other side of the checkerboard. You know, it's really kind of fallen out in the United States of, you know, popularity. It's still very popular in places, certain places in Europe. We talk about that in the show. There's a lot of great backgammon players that come from Denmark because backgammon is really, really popular in clubs and cafes there. It's also massively popular in Japan, and there's a lot of great backgammon players in Japan. But having said all that, backgammon has kept its appeal, and it's you know, it has stayed popular among professional gamblers and games players. And so the way that I kind of pitched it to the Ringer when I told them I wanted to do an episode on backgammon, which they couldn't believe. They were like, "Why? That sounds ridiculous. Why would we do an episode on backgammon? Who gambles on backgammon?" Is it's kind of like this is the gambler's gambling game, right? Like, the, you know, people who are professional gamblers and good at gambling in other arenas all play backgammon, you know, like maybe they don't play backgammon professionally, but they love the game. And I found that to be true when I went to the episode, in the episode, I go to Monaco, to Monte Carlo for the World Championships of backgammon. And I mean, the people that I meet in this episode are, they are all chess players. They are sports gamblers. They are poker players. Pool players, people that invest in the stock market. So there are people who, you know, all understand and love games and make their living from it, but across the board, they all love backgammon. I think that's unique to backgammon. It doesn't exist with other types of games, right? I mean, where everybody dabbles in it a little bit. It really did seem to be kind of a cross-section of games enthusiasts and games players and gamblers there. But yeah, I had to convince the Ringer that this was a good topic for an episode. And I feel like I proved it when I came back from Monaco with this episode, because I really run into a pretty wild cast of characters, and we had a lot of fun, and I think we made a pretty fun episode.
How long were you in Monaco? I don't recall seeing any social media banner waving from Monaco. Were you low key?
A little bit. I mean, I tweeted a couple of pictures when I was there. I think the reason you didn't see it, Steve, was because I was tweeting in the middle of the night because of the time difference. but yeah, I was there for 4 or 5 days. The tournament was 6 days, and it felt like a pretty whirlwind trip. The episode is centered around these two guys that I hooked up with who were going to book the tournament. And so a tradition at the Backgammon World Championships is that they have somebody who kind of acts as the tournament bookmaker and will just sort of put up a bankroll and book the tournament. And anybody can bet on any player in the tournament on every day of the tournament. So you can bet on yourself, right? It's a way for players to kind of enlarge the prize pool. There's the prize pool, then people have last longer bets, they have side pools, they have jail bets with each other. And then there's this bookmaker who will booked the whole event. And it can be, you know, costly. People bet €1,000 on themselves, you know, like they're all trying to pump up how much money they're playing for by betting on themselves. So these two professional gamblers were going to book the event. And I won't spoil the whole episode for your listeners. I hope they'll go listen to it, but things don't go exactly as we had planned. And they kind of take an interesting turn halfway through the episode. But it was a lot of fun, and it was a kind of a cool way to get to cover the event where I'm not only following these players, but I'm also betting on them, and I'm following the bookmakers while they're taking bets on them. So there's a lot of different things going on. There's who's going to win the tournament, who's going to win money on betting on the tournament, is the bookmaker going to go broke? You know, like it's a lot of fun.
Fitting finale to the gamblers season, and for those that you know are new to Dave's gamblers series, how many total episodes are there now with all the seasons?
There's 14. Yeah, there were 7 in each season.
There you go. All right, so you can catch up. And what season 3 in the works?
Well, I haven't heard anything yet. I mean, I hope that they'll want to do a third season, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, hopefully people will listen to this season and leave reviews for it and, you know, tell the Ringer how great they think it is, and maybe they'll let me do another one. But, you know, I also maybe, you know, maybe once it got back, it trickles, now that it's out and it trickles up to Bill Simmons that I spend all their money going to Monte Carlo and gambling on backgammon tournaments, they may hit second thoughts about sending me back out in the world again.
I don't think so. Not as great as gamblers has been, and everybody has enjoyed, and you know, the diversity involved, all the different areas. Backgammon and Monte Carlo, the 7th of the 7 episodes this season. Spotify original programming with Dave Hill, and I will send the link out early this afternoon. Dave, as always, a pleasure. Now, next week we'll be right on the teeth of Breeders' Cup, so we'll probably get a Breeders' Cup opinion or two as the principal conversation, and just reference everybody to your column.
Of course.
All right.
Happy to talk it. Yep.
Well, and of course, you know, one thing you can remind them over there at you know, with the show is with the Ringer, you know, you're from Hot Springs, which is the Monte Carlo of Arkansas.
It's the Monte Carlo of America.
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah.
Dave Hill, 77, everybody. David, thank you, buddy.
Thanks.
So much fun. So much fun. Dave Hill. I'm going to get Rich Eng in. We got to get Rich because here we are a week out from Breeders' Cup. Actually, that's a reality, right? When we get together tomorrow at 9, we're exactly a week out, and the countdown begins in earnest. Thanks to Dave for a always fun visit. And I want to check in with Rich, get about 10, 12 minutes to talk about his preparation for Breeders' Cup and just catch up. We haven't talked to Rich in way too long. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. I know you're a busy guy as we ramp up for Breeders' Cup, so I understand.
Well, we're getting excited. A couple of different things before anything. You know, we're getting close to the end of the year. It's November next week, and that means the book has got to be getting close.
That is correct. An update on the book Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, second edition, is the manuscript is complete. I've handed everything into the publisher, the Wiley Publishing. They're putting the final touches on the editing and the layout of the book. And believe it or not, Steve, it's going to press soon. And knock on wood, the schedule is supposed to be out and available to the public right before Christmas.
Well, perfect. I mean, how soon will we have pre-order information, or do we have it already?
I'll have to get more details from the Wiley folks, but, you know, when we had the original timeline planned many, many, many months ago, the goal was to have the book available for Christmas shopping, and, you know, hopefully, you know, there's a lot of people out there that know people who are maybe interested in horse racing that are brand newcomers, don't know anything about the sport or about the gambling or anything about horse racing, and this would be a great introduction for them to get involved in our wonderful game.
Exactly. Well, I was happy to contribute a blurb. Don't know if it makes the back cover yet, but it is certainly my pleasure to provide one. Reading the galleys, you know, all the things we've talked about with Rich, and of course, you know, we'll be able to start dissecting and maybe, yeah, actually, we probably, after Breeders' Cup, Rich, we could probably, you know, start to pull out some chapters and flesh out a few, you know, topics and some of the areas in which you know, felt compelled to update. And you know, the show maybe how the game has changed in a relatively short period of time since the, you know, the original publication.
Yeah, the original Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies I wrote actually during the 2004 year, and it came out in the spring of 2005 before, you know, during the middle of the Triple Crown prep races and things like that. And I remember I even went back to Churchill Downs and pre-Derby and did Radio Row and it was handing out books to all the radio people and the TV people. That was kind of fun. Not sure if I'll be able to do it again this year, but that remains to be seen. But that was the timing. So it's been 2 decades since the first Dummies book came out, and it's remarkable how much has changed. I know the Dummies people, when we were doing the negotiations, the first book was, Steve, was 390 pages. And they budgeted 420 pages for the second edition, meaning 30 new pages of material. By the time I was done with the original manuscript, I was up to 450 pages. So believe it or not, I had to go back in, and it took a couple of weeks. I had to start editing stuff out. So I feel bad about not having everything in that I wanted to have in. But, you know, there were certain parameters that I had to work with, did the best I could.
That's interesting, because my reaction before you mentioning, you know, that you ended up on the over, I would have thought that you would have pared down more, actually, that you wouldn't have gone over. That's interesting. Good. That's what we'll do as part of the build-up to the release. Meanwhile, we got about 5 or 6 minutes, and I might want to get a New York opinion today from the Pick Six. We'll do that in a second. But, Rich, give everybody your thumbnail sketch for what they should be doing between now and Monday when they draw the fields, you know, the way they're going to line up in the gate. There's plenty to accomplish here over the next 96-plus hours.
Well, the number one thing is they should pick up the Breeders' Cup Advance from Daily Racing Form. It's available today. And also, you know, if you can't get the hard copy, you can always download it off the DRF.com website. But it's not too early to start going over the fields, even though they haven't drawn the post positions or got a morning line or anything like that, or had the first or, you know, second preference on a lot of these cross-entered horses. But you need to kind of start boiling down the matter so that when they actually draw the post positions and figure out who's going to run where, that, you know, you're not starting from scratch. It's a lot of work. It's, what was it, 14 races? It's a lot of work with full field. So it's worth getting started now, and you can pick that up today and start reviewing, going over these horses.
Well, and there is, you know, even though Nick Tamaro's line isn't out yet, and we will do a thumbnail sketch tomorrow with Nick and go through the races, and he'll give you, you know, his early feel and you know, where the numbers are likely to fall. But Brad Free's morning line is available in the DRF Advance and in their package. Brad does the line for all the Saturday races. David Aragona does them for the Friday races. So just as part of the pre-entry list, there is a working line. So, you know, for those that want to, you know, get a feel and have an idea where they think their, you know, middle-priced long shot key horse might be or thereabouts, you utilize David and Brad's approach, which are, consistently excellent. Rich, we got about 3 minutes. Let's see if you can't help with a simulcast play today. And this pick six carryover, I'm going to build my ticket. My picks were done, but I'm going to build the ticket now that we are, we've got the scratches. And that ninth race came off the turf. That's the only race. The first and the ninth came off, but the ninth is the only race to worry about in the sequence that came off.
Is race five still on the grass?
Five and seven are on.
Okay, because the horse I was going to like a little bit in that fifth race was the eight, Ocean Atlantique, Kendrick Carmouche riding for Mike Maker. Mike Maker's been doing some really good work at Keeneland, but he's certainly got horses back in New York. But this horse is either going to be on the lead or real close to the lead. So I like the eight, Ocean Atlantique in the fifth race.
There seems like there's pace in the fifth, and I've got Ocean Atlantic picked as my fourth horse, as the exotic fourth inclusion. I thought with the pace involved that Wooten Asset and Shadow Sphinx, the three and the five respectively, Wooten Asset for Graham Motion, Shadow Sphinx for the aforementioned Mike Maker, they're both going to be motoring late. Of the speeds, and there's a bunch of the speeds. I thought that Ocean Atlantique was the speed that could hang around. Advanced Strategy, who is 10-1 for Phil Antonacci. Advanced Strategy is clever in there, I think. And I don't know if I'm using more than Wooten Asset and Shadow Sphinx, but I've got it 3, 5, 7, 8 in that fifth. One horse that might be a lean Don't Lose Cruise we talked about with yesterday by Rich Schossberg, 9-5. It's going to the 2-year-old, the 6-furlong race, is going to have to work out the trip from the far post, but got IRAD to do it. Anything else catch you in this sequence, Rich, that you want to pass on?
Well, I'm really glad you mentioned the five Shadow Sphinx, because that's an uncoupled entry from Maker. And how many times have we seen a trainer with two horses in the race and the longer odds horse wins?
The other Maker. We love it. Well, I'll have this up. Give me about 15 minutes to formulate the tickets, and it'll be up at the races website. Rich, good to connect. Are you doing selections for BrisNet next week? Yes.
Yeah, I was contacted by them a week or two ago, and I'll be doing a full page reports, usually about 7-8 pages worth of full card on Friday and for Saturday, and it's fun to do because it's the kind of work that you just want to dive in with your fork and knife and really have a great meal or handicapping these 2 days of races at Keeneland.
Well, and a lot of people make Rich's analysis for days like the Cup part of their opinion gathering, so we'll push that again and maybe get one thought. I never like to short circuit what people are paying for, so I understand that part of it, but we'll touch base next week as well, Rich.
Yeah, sounds good, Steve. Thank you very much. Great to hearing you, and I can't wait. In fact, I haven't gotten my copy of the advancement to head over to the office now and start doing my homework.
Rich Eng, everybody. Rich Eng for Pro Pick, and, of course, his Southern California analysis at racedaylasvegas.com. There we go, and managed to get in under the wire. Thanks to Tim Schramm and Jim Goodman in the first half of the show for setting the stage for BCBC and everything going on in the betting menu. Chuck, nice visit with Chuck on his way back to the Capital District. Dave Hill and Rich Eng here in this last half hour or so, or hour. And tomorrow, weekend preview at the races. Ty Wisman is going to join us. Nick Tamaro, Steve Anderson, Hammer, and much, much more. I'll have the pick six up here shortly. Enjoy, everybody. Good luck. Let's get lucky. And talk to you in the morning at the races. Thanks.
We think there is a soul. We don't know.
It's At The Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.